and welcome to Misinformation, the trivia podcast for ladies and gents who love cool trivia and sticking it to annoying teams at pub quiz.
We're your hosts. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Julia.
Julia, how are you?
Hey, great. How are you?
Oh my God, I'm so stressed out.
Oh no.
Yeah. I've been moving. I'm in the process of moving. Yeah. Yep. I moved far away from you. Actually, this is my last episode. No, I moved literally a mile from you, so we can see each other more often than we do now. I don't know anybody that likes to move.
Oh,
moving is the most stressful, worst thing. I told Steve when we moved into the house, I was like, "We're gonna die here because I am not moving again. This is a friggin' nightmare." But while I was packing up my apartment, I like to keep the TV on in the background.
Oh, yeah.
Because if I'm not listening to our podcast, there's nothing else for me to do.
It's not weird that we listen to our own podcast.
Like over and over again. So I was watching TV and I was watching Catfish, as you know, the TV show on MTV. I love that show. Oh my gosh. I love the reveal when it turns out to be like their brother. You know what I mean?
And they're like, I just got in too deep.
Like, I started just to make you feel better after you broke up with your girlfriend. And now, 6 years later, you're in love with... this girl that whose image I found on Facebook. Oh my God, it's a great show. We'll do a whole episode on Catfish. But I was watching it, and MTV plays a ton of commercials in between. It's always the same, like 8 commercials. But apparently, they rebooted TRL. Did you know this? Yeah, Total Request Live is back, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, I just got some flashbacks.
I know. Ooh, well, if you're going to love this episode then, because it's just a whole host of flashbacks. So I was thinking, TRL is back. That was when we were in high school.
Right.
And they're bringing it back for the younger generation, and it looks so bad. Can I tell you? Oh my gosh. It like reeks of desperation.
Because what is compelling teens to sit in front of a television?
No, they have Tumblr now. Why would you sit in front of the TV?
And all kinds of apps we don't even know about.
What's Kick? Do I know what Kick is? Isn't there one like...
I don't know. They're Peach?
Is Peach one?
That's
Princess Peach. No.
No. Peach was people just saying something had the number 69 in it and everyone else going, nice.
Is that just an app about that?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh my gosh. Teens are so weird. Anyway, speaking of teens. So I was thinking about it. TRL. I was thinking about my past with MTV, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to talk about MTV. So this episode is going to be entitled, I Want My MTV. Okay, so you can't talk about MTV without talking about the history of music videos.
Exactly.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about how we got to MTV.
All right.
So the earliest recording of something even like close to akin to a music video was in 1894. What? Sheet Music.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Jeez.
Well, wait for the description. Sheet Music publishers Edward B. Marks and Joe Stern hired electrician George Thomas and various performers to promote sales of their song, The Little Lost Child. Using a magic lantern, Thomas projected a series of still images on a screen simultaneous to live performances. This would become a popular form of entertainment known as the illustrated song, which was the first step toward music videos. So with the arrival of talkies in 1926, you know, when movies finally got sound, many musical short films were produced, and animation artist Max Fleischer introduced a series of sing-along short cartoons called Screen Songs that encouraged viewers to sing along to popular songs by following the bouncing ball.
And so it was like Camp Town Races?
Yeah, like Camp Town Races. Like karaoke. That's all it was. So you can imagine, like, you go to the movies in like the late 20s. Mm-hmm. And there's these short videos, and everyone's singing.
The little
singing,
bouncing ball, and like with the Disney sing-along songs.
And everyone's singing along, which is my nightmare.
Oh.
I don't like it when people sing in public.
She's uncomfortable.
I'm very uncomfortable. So early 1930s cartoons featured popular musicians singing their songs on camera in live-action segments during the cartoon. So kind of like Zippity Doo-Dah.
Okay.
Somewhere around like that, where they're surrounded by cartoons and they're singing their song. Additionally, early Walt Disney films such as The Silly Symphonies and the classic Fantasia which featured interpretations of classical pieces, were also built around music. And Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies from Warner Brothers were initially fashioned around specific songs from upcoming musical films distributed by Warner Brothers.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yes. So it was all tied into promotion, which is just like, again, an ancestor of music videos, because music videos were created for promotional purposes and still are to this day. So a nice tidbit of info: in 1929, blues singer Bessie Smith appeared in a two-reel short film called St. Louis Blues, which featured a dramatized performance of the hit song. And numerous other musicians appeared in short musical subjects during this period as well.
Cool.
Something called soundies. Like, everything has to be diminutive.
Talkies was taken.
I guess so. What something sounds like talkies. Yeah. they were produced and released from 1940 to 1947, and those were musical films that often included short dance sequences, similar to later music videos. And musical films like Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, which is one of my favorite Marilyn Monroe movies.
I almost said Madonna movies.
Well, you're not that far off, because the Material Girl...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Material Girl video was almost like step for step, the identical, like... shot from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, except Marilyn Monroe did it better. But anyway, so these were also important precursors to music videos. So in his autobiography, Tony Bennett claims to have created the first music video when he was filmed walking along the Serpentine in Hyde Park, London in 1956, with the resulting clip being sent to his recording of the song Stranger in Paradise.
Oh, wow.
So the clip was sent to UK and US television stations and aired on shows, including the Dick Clark's American Bandstand. And between 1960 and 1973, European musicians were using early music videos called promotional clips or promos to promote their music throughout the continent and around the world. And these started out in what was known as visual jukeboxes, like the French Scopatone, the Cinebox in Italy, and Color Sonic in the US. So... you know, not everybody had a TV and not everybody had, you know, a ton of channels. So if you wanted to see a video jukebox, you would go to where you would have a jukebox at a bar or at an amusement park,
an arcade,
that kind of thing. And you can watch early music videos, for better or for worse.
Cool.
So no one did this better than the Beatles during this time period, however. They used music videos.
The Beatles.
I'm sorry.
The Beatles.
Is that your Liverpudlian accent?
It's a rough one.
Oh, wow. It's spot on. I feel like I'm sitting across from Paul McCartney. I am weirded out right now.
Yeah.
So they used music videos to promote their records starting in the mid-1960s, especially within their films, like A Hard Day's Night and Help. And they are credited so heavily with creating this idea of promotional music videos within the context of a film that on June 26th, 1999, MTV honored the film's directors, Richard Lester, with an award for basically inventing the music video.
Wow.
That's a direct quote.
It's probably, is that what's inscribed on the Moon Man statue? Basically
inventing the music video. This wasn't 1999. So, you know, you remember 99. So this is a cool thing. In 1977, Warner Cable launched the first two-way interactive cable television system named Cube in Columbus, Ohio. That's Q-U-B-E.
Okay.
It offered specialized channels like Sight on Sound, which was a music channel that featured concert footage and music-oriented television programs. With the interactive Cube service, viewers could vote for their favorite songs and artists. Isn't that weird?
Wow, that seems early.
It seems very early, but it did not do great because I think it was extraordinarily expensive.
Yeah, that's the thing, is so many of these people had these great ideas, but then it was like, these things didn't work because nobody
could
had
afford
them.
It. Yeah. So media exec and future president and CEO of MTV, Robert W. Pittman, had test-driven the music format by producing and hosting a 15-minute show called Album Tracks in New York City television station WNBC-TV in the late 1970s. So he already had come up with this format idea and actually brought it to MTV.
Cool.
So here we go. MTV launches. On Saturday, August 1st, 1981, at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Time, MTV launched with the words, "Ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll." Spoken by John Lack and played over footage of the first space shuttle launch countdown of Columbia, which took place earlier that year. and of the launch of Apollo 11. Those words were immediately followed by the original MTV theme song, a crunching rock tune composed by Jonathan Elias and John Peterson, playing over the American flag changed to show MTV's logo changing into various textures and designs.
Yeah.
You remember
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I can picture that.
MTV producers Alan Goodman and Fred Siebert used this public domain footage as a concept. Siebert said that they had originally planned to use Neil Armstrong's One Small Step quote, but lawyers said that Armstrong owned the name and likeness and that he had refused. Oh. So the quote was replaced with just a beeping sound. They couldn't even come up with something else. They're like, just put beeps.
But the footage was public domain because it was part of the government created.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. A shortened version of the shuttle launch ID ran at the top of every hour in various forms from MTV's first day until it was pulled in early 1986 in the wake of the Challenger disaster. Yeah. So that was done in 1986. Julia, what was the first video played on MTV?
Video Killed the Radio Star.
Yes. Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles. It was originally only available to homes in New Jersey. that specific music video.
Wow.
Do you know what the second music video played? See, nope. this in my research, mm-hmm. this came up a lot. Like, what was the second?
Yeah. So like, y'all know the first.
Yeah. So the second video played was Pat Benatar's You Better Run. I don't know that song.
I don't know
Have you heard that song?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I haven't heard it. So if Pat Benatar, get at me. this is a fun detail. Sporadically, the screen would go black when an employee at MTV inserted a tape into the VCR. Mm-hmm. Like, so low budget. MTV's effect was immediate in areas where the new music video channel was carried. Within 2 months, record stores in areas where MTV was available were selling music that local radio stations were not playing.
Oh, yeah.
Such as Men at Work, Bow Wow Wow, and the Human League. So a lot of foreign bands and artists were being featured.
Yeah, and like sounds that didn't play on the radios over here, like
exactly.
New Wave and stuff like
so
that.
So it kind of expanded this whole, like, what kind of music you could get at.
Because
before then, it was either you just walk into a record store and you just, like, randomly pick something up, or you listen to the radio. Mm-hmm. So MTV really expanded that. And in fact, MTV sparked the second British invasion with British acts, who had already been accustomed to using music videos for half a decade, thanks to the Beatles, which, so British acts were featured heavily on the channel because they already had music videos just ready to go. So the original purpose of MTV was to be a music television, playing music videos 24 hours a day and 7 days a week, which were guided by on-air personalities known as VJs or video jockeys. And the original slogans of the channel were, "You'll never look at music the same way again," and "On cable in stereo."
Wow. And that was also back when channels weren't all 24 hours anyway.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's like a big deal.
Yes. That is also a big deal. And MTV's earliest format was modeled after what's known as AOR. It's album-oriented rock radio. So like you would play as many songs as possible to sell the whole album kind of thing. MTV would transition to mimic a full top 40 station in 1984.
Yeah.
So 1984 is when it was like all pop, all the time, crazy music videos, Madonna and Michael Jackson and all sorts of cool stuff. So, handsome, young, hot 80s men and women were hired to host the channel's programming, these VJs. And they introduced music videos that were being played and, many VJs eventually became celebrities in their own right.
Yeah.
And the original five MTV VJs in 1981 were Nina Blackwood, Mark Goodman, Alan Hunter, J.J. Jackson, and Martha Quinn. All of these people are in their 60s now.
Wow, they're all
60s? Yeah, they're all in their 60s. Oh. I know. These are our parents' age. Hi, Mom and Dad. The VJs would record intro and outro voiceovers before broadcasts, along with music news and interviews and concert dates and promotions. And they would appear to air live across the MTV program schedule 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. So this was like, the format was unheard of. There's music videos all the time. A lot of the early stuff was, as I had mentioned before, these British promos, these British and European promos. And rock bands and performers of the 1980s who had airplay on MTV were bands and artists like Adam Ant, Blondie, Prince, Split Enz, Culture Club, Motley Crue, Duran Duran, Bon Jovi, The Police, The Cars, etc. The channel also rotated the music videos of Weird Al Yankovic.
Cool.
Yeah, they also aired several specials by him in the 1980s and 90s under the title Al TV. And the rise of MTV in the 80s created a boom in music video production, especially amongst pop and dance acts. And MTV was instrumental in adding to the 80s dance wave.
Yeah.
Production values and budgets increased, and artists began to use fully choreographed dance numbers in their videos. Like Michael Jackson, you think of the Thriller video. It was like a huge, like, cinematic deal. So they saw that they could make a lot more money just by putting out a video and it just being rotated through MTV all the time because it was such a huge hit. So during MTV's first few years on the air, very few black artists were included in rotation on the channel.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, even Michael Jackson had a really hard time getting airtime on MTV. Wow. Like, before 1983, he struggled to get... And he was like the biggest pop star.
Wow.
Not just like the biggest black pop star.
Yeah.
Like the biggest pop star in the world. And he had a hard time. So the very first people of color to perform on MTV was the British band The Specials, which featured an integrated lineup of white and black musicians and vocalists. And The Specials' video Rat Race was played as the 58th video on the station's first day of broadcasting.
Hmm.
But they were a band, and it was a mix of, you know, black and white people. MTV also rejected other black artists' videos, such as Rick James's Super Freak, because they did not fit the channel's carefully selected album-oriented rock format at the time. And the exclusion enraged James. He publicly advocated the addition of more black artists' videos on the channel. And rock legend David Bowie also questioned MTV's lack of black artists during an on-air interview with VJ Mark Goodman in 1983. And MTV's original head of talent and acquisition, Carolyn B. Baker, who was black, had questioned why the definition of music had to be so narrow.
Oh, my gosh.
As had a few others outside the network. And she said, the party line at MTV was that we weren't playing black music because of the quote-unquote research. She said many years later, but the research was based on ignorance. We were young. We were cutting edge. We didn't have to be on the cutting edge of racism. But nevertheless, this is my favorite part of this whole thing. Nevertheless, it was Baker who had personally rejected Rick James's video for Super Freak because she said there were half naked women in it and it was a piece of crap. As a black woman, I did not want that representing my people as the first black video on MTV. So I read this.
Oh my God.
And I went to YouTube.
Yeah.
And I clicked on Super Freak by Rick James, and she is not wrong.
It is a piece
of crap.
That
video is garbage. It is garbage. I don't think I'd ever seen it like in its entirety before. Because you've seen him singing it and he's like covered in glitter. Like his wig is just coated in glitter and his face is covered in glitter. Son of Buffalo, by the way, Rick James.
Really?
Yes. Born and raised and lived a good part of his life in Buffalo. He had like a mansion there.
Oh, my.
And he's buried at Forest Lawn. So you can go
I
visit
didn't
him.
Know that.
I've seen his grave. Oh. It's surprisingly
tasteful.
Tasteful, yes. The only good thing about that video is that the ladies who are in it are a broad range of different
body types.
Nope, unfortunately they're all skinny.
Oh.
But broad range of ethnicities.
Oh, okay.
Which is, you know, they have a good representation. And I found the lack of body modifications refreshing.
Oh, okay.
So there was like natural teeth and like regular ass boobs and like sweat stains and stuff and like stringy hair. I was like, good on you girls. Because that would never fly today. But it really was just a crappy music video. Just like, ugh, not good at all. Anyway. So to resolve the struggle and finally break the color barrier, the president of CBS Records at the time, Walter Yetnikoff, who had signed Michael Jackson, denounced MTV in a strong, profane statement.
Ooh, boy.
Threatening to take away MTV's ability to play any of the record label's music videos. And however, Lee Garland, then acquisitions head, said he decided to air Jackson's Billie Jean video without pressure from CBS, and that was disputed. But according to the Austin Chronicle, Jackson's video for the song Billie Jean was the video that broke the color barrier, even though the channel itself was responsible for erecting that barrier in the first place.
Wow.
Yikes. So that was some controversy, but it was quickly resolved because regardless of the timeline, many black artists had their videos played in heavy rotation the following year, 1984, along with Michael Jackson, Prince, Donna Summer. Other black artists such as Billy Ocean, Stevie Wonder, Tina Turner, Chaka Khan, Lionel Richie, the Pointer Sisters, Diana Ross, all these people were all played in heavy rotation.
So by 1984, they'd kind of like addressed the issue.
They addressed it quickly, which, you know, small kudos to them. So the first award show that they had was the VMAs. They started that in 1984, the Video Music Awards. That particular one was punctuated by a live performance by Madonna of Like a Virgin. That's the one of her like rolling around on stage.
84. Wow.
Yeah, 84. It seems so long ago. It really was. The statue.
You weren't born yet.
We weren't born. Neither one of us. Well, no, you were probably. Who knows? What's I'm eternal. Time? You are eternal. The statuettes that are handed out the Video Music Awards are of the MTV Moon Man, the channel's original image from its first broadcast in 1981. Mm-hmm. And that's still to this day. Presently, the Video Music Awards are MTV's most watched annual event.
Which is usually because a lot of like weird things have happened at them.
Well, and also the past couple of years, I mean, I've tuned in rarely since I turned 25. Like, I have not been really making sure that I'm home for the VMAs. But now it seems like they're trying to like court controversy, like coming up. You are not going to believe who's singing with Katy Perry tonight. And it's so dumb.
Yeah.
So it just seems to be they're MTV to me, granted, as a 32-year-old, seems like it's starting to kind of reek of desperation where it's like, teens, right? Cool teens. We're cool teens. Sick. You know, like dumb stuff like that.
Yo, dog.
Aren't we bros? I don't know. I don't know what teens say. And neither does MTV. So we're going to talk a little bit about their TV shows.
Okay.
MTV began its annual spring break coverage starting in 1986. Do you remember that?
I remember that.
I had blocked it out until I read this.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my God, spring break.
I feel like there was a whole... like that was a trope in so many TV like sitcoms and stuff where it was like they're going on spring break and they're going to try to get on camera at MTV.
Well, yeah, I mean that whole well not in 1986 but definitely when we were in high school it was like Girls Gone Wild.
Ugh.
That whole thing, there was a lot of movies about spring break. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of like teen TV shows, spring break going nuts.
I never wanted to go to spring break.
Oh my gosh,
ever.
Never.
It just looks like a nightmare.
Oh my God, no sleep. You're on a beach.
Ew. Surrounded by so many people.
Ugh. There's the sun, the hot sun. And then people are trying to make you like, I don't know, dance? It's awful.
They're throwing beach balls around so that you can pound it.
Where do you eat? Where do you eat? Do you eat?
Oh,
I'm going to drink lukewarm beer on a beach. No, thank you.
Warm beer on a beach while you gradually, your skin just turns lobster red.
That sounds like a nightmare. And you're sleeping like eight to a bed.
Yes.
Ugh.
Uh-huh. In like Tijuana.
And you're drinking beer because you can't drink the water. Oh my gosh. So apparently starting in 1986, they set up temporary operations in Daytona Beach, Florida for a week in March, broadcasting live 8 hours a day.
So for those of you who couldn't make it to Daytona
you
Beach
could just watch
for spring
it.
Break,
you can just
live vicariously.
You can watch these dum-dums make fools of themselves on TV. This continued until the mid-2000s. They did this exact thing until the mid-2000s. So were doing that same format.
8 hours though, man. That's crazy.
I know.
Well, it's an alternative to reading your mother's Sears catalogs.
I guess. Yes, exactly. In the mid-2000s, the focus of spring break was de-emphasized and it was handed off to MTVU.
Okay.
Which is the like the arm of MTV that only broadcasts on university campuses.
Okay.
So another TV show was called Headbangers Ball, if you remember that. I never watched it, but it was a late night music video show featuring heavy metal music and news. And that debuted in 1987 and it was abruptly canceled in 1995. It featured several hosts, including Ricky Rochtman and Adam Curry, and a weekly block of music videos with the name Headbangers Ball aired from 2003 to 2011 on sister channel MTV2, before spending an additional 2 years as a web-only series on MTV2's website until Headbangers Ball was discontinued once again in 2013, much to the chagrin of many
headbangers.
In 1988, MTV debuted Yo! MTV Raps. I'm trying to say this as white girl as possible. This was a hip-hop rap formatted program. The program continued until August 1995, when it was renamed to simply Yo! There's an exclamation point, which exclamation is why I'm saying point. It like that. And it aired as a one-hour program from 95 to 99, and the concept was reintroduced as Direct Effect in 2000, which later became Sucker Free in 2006 and was canceled.
None of those sound anything like Yo! MTV Raps.
No, I know. Well, Sucker Free, I remember Sucker Free Sundays. That was like a thing. Like on Sunday, they would air Sucker Free and you could watch rap videos. I'm very cool, Julia. So Sucker Free was canceled in 2008 after briefly celebrating the 20th anniversary of Yo! MTV Raps throughout the months of April and May 2008. And despite its cancellation on MTV, a weekly countdown of hip hop videos known as Sucker Free still airs on MTV2 throughout the present day. In 1989, MTV began to premiere music-based specials such as MTV Unplugged.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
An acoustic performance show which featured dozens of acts as its guests and has remained active in numerous iterations on various platforms for over 20 years. Wow. So they're still doing Unplugged to a certain extent, either on MTV or on MTV2.
People always talk about the Nirvana one.
That's like a big...
Clutch.
Yeah, that was like a big deal one. Also by 97, MTV was criticized heavily for not playing as many music videos, which is just a constant thing. If they're not doing it 24/7, everyone's mad. In response, MTV created four shows that centered on music videos: MTV Live, Total Request, Say What, and 12 Angry Viewers, none of which I had ever heard of, but, in 1998, MTV merged Total Request and MTV Live to make... Total Request Live, a daily top 10 countdown show. Also at this time, MTV introduced its new studios in Times Square, which is why you had screaming teens outside of the TRL studio. TRL was hosted by the handsome and charming Carson Daly, who has the personality
of charismatic man.
Oh my God. He's got the personality of a sponge and a face like a healthy potato. Like, I know you, okay, a quick anecdote about Julia. We used to watch The Voice. And we used to have voice fantasy football. We had fantasy voice. And she hated Carson Daly so much because he hosted The Voice. Still does. She actually wrote, NBC.
Yes. And I said, get him off my TV. Why is he still here? And then they put him on the Today Show. He was running the Orange Room in the Today Show. And I was like, you need somebody that has a better personality than a sack of rocks to host this show.
I don't understand. Are we the only two sane people? It's like, I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone. Has anyone heard him speak or talk or do anything? Have you looked at his face? How is this guy, how has he become as famous as he has and gotten so many gigs? I don't understand. He is a dum-dum. And if Carson Daly, if you're hearing this right now,
we are not apologizing.
We are not fans of yours. Give up the ghost. Okay, so Carson Daly hosted TRL. I watched it. You watched it. When I was in high school, my sister and I, we would run home. We would get off the bus. We would run down our long driveway. We would turn on the TV before mom and dad came home. My dad would come home at 5. Mm-hmm. We would watch TRL. We'd be glued to the TV until we literally heard dad's key in the lock. And then we would shut off the TV and we would run like the wind to the kitchen table and act like we were doing our homework. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cause he hated when the TV was on when we were home, whether we had homework or not. Sorry, dad, you're learning about this now.
you can't ground her anymore.
No, you cannot. In the fall of 99, a live studio audience was added to the show. Like every time a commercial break would come back. And by spring 2000, the countdown reached its peak, which was peak you and I, like we definitely was there. When Carson Daly left MTV to get his own late night talk show, which didn't work out, the relevance and impact of Total Request Live slowly diminished for some reason. I don't know why Carson Daly has to be the linchpin of this television show about music. I don't, I'm incensed all over all again by this. All
of the viewers, they were so angry were like, that he left that they...
Carson Daly. Do you remember when he dated, what was her name?
Tara Reid.
He dated Tara Reid.
He also dated Jennifer Love Hewitt.
How did he get these hot girls? He was, you know what? He sold his soul to the devil. That's it.
You heard it here, folks.
He Robert Johnsoned himself. And something bad's going to happen to him after he dies. Anyway, TRL ultimately remained a part of MTV's regular program schedule for 10 years. It's been around. It was on for 10 years. Can you believe
that? That's
it?
Crazy.
The series came to an end with a special finale episode called Total Finale Live, which aired November 16th, 2008, and featured all the show's hosts from over the years. Many special guests from the history of the show.
Destiny's Child. Justin yep. Timberlake. Yep. Britney Spears.
Oh my God. It's like
Pink.
You're a savant.
Kelly Clarkson.
Oh. Mariah Carey. Remember when she took off her pants? No. She took off her top and she was just wearing a shirt. And she gave ice cream.
That was like peak crazy Mariah.
Yeah, too. That was like the beginning of her meltdown. Oh man. We could do like 2 hours on this. So they played the last music video for TRL, which was Baby One More Time by Britney Spears.
Maybe that's not so appropriate.
No, it's not. You know, you watch it now and it's like, ooh, that hasn't aged well. Yeah. This whole like schoolgirl thing, not cute.
No.
Anyway, God bless you, Britney Spears. You went through a lot. MTV celebrated its 20th anniversary on August 1st, 2001, beginning with a 12-hour-long retrospective called MTV 20, Buggles to Biscuit, as in Limp Biscuit, which was, as you know, in the annals of history, is one of the best. No, it's a terrible band. Everyone hates it now. It featured over 100 classic videos played chronologically, hosted by various VJs and reproductions of MTV's old studios. They really put in a lot of effort into this. The day of programming culminated in a 3-hour celebratory live event called MTV 20 Live and Almost Legal, which was hosted by Carson Daly.
Oh, God.
He hosted the 20th anniversary special. Why do they keep bringing him back?
And he didn't make any expressions with his face the whole time.
He was like, hey guys, welcome back.
And like so barely, barely his mouth moved.
Oh my God. Anyway, it featured numerous guests from MTV's history, including the original VJs. So this is an interesting thing and maybe something we should chit chat about. MTV reached his 30th year of broadcasting in 2011. The channel passed over this milestone in favor of its current programming schedule. They did not acknowledge it whatsoever.
Oh my gosh.
So the channel instead aired its 30th anniversary celebrations on its sister networks, MTV 2 and VH1 Classic. So the reason behind this, Nathaniel Brown, who's the senior vice president of communications for MTV, confirmed that there were no plans for an on-air MTV celebration similar to the 20th anniversary celebration. Mm-hmm. And he explained, MTV as a brand doesn't age with our viewers. We are really focused on our current viewers, and our feeling was that our anniversary wasn't something that would be meaningful to them, many of whom weren't even alive in 1981. So I can see the value in this.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're 16, you don't care about the 30th anniversary special. In fact, you don't really want to be reminded of how old this TV channel is that you watch with all of your like cool friends, you know.
You guys got to watch the Cribs show and my 16-year-old pregnant cousin show.
Cribs isn't on anymore? They don't have Cribs anymore.
Well, this was a while ago.
Oh, okay.
Right.
This was 2011. It wasn't that long ago. but like, I can understand where they're coming from because they want to stay.
Was that on in 2011?
My Ride was definitely on MTV. It was on. It was hosted by. Who was it hosted by? I don't remember. Exhibit hosted Pimp My Ride. Exhibit hosted Pimp My Ride. And that lasted a long time. But I mean, think about all the TV shows. There was the Tom Green Show. There was Jackass.
The Tom Green Show.
Remember when Tom Green was a celebrity? How is that a thing?
Remember when he put his butt on everything?
Oh, stop it. I just blocked that out last week.
Sorry. Not his butt.
It's his bum. It's the bum bum song. I can't believe I remember that. Man, men have...
His bum is on the Swedish.
What? You are pulling out. I feel like I'm going to be sick. I am just so many repressed memories. I can't.
This is just a version of therapy.
We don't actually put this podcast out. No. We just record this and then delete it later. So here's a tidbit of information. As of April 2017, no music video programming currently airs on MTV.
Really?
None. Absolutely none. There's no programming. So they used to, like, during the credits rolling mm-hmm. of a TV show, they would play like 10 seconds of a music video, mm-hmm. like in a split screen under the credits, and be like, go to MTV.com to see more of this
okay.
Justin Bieber video. Do you remember the TV? Do you remember the do you remember the TV show Behind the Music Video or Making the Music Video? I loved that show.
That one.
It was, they would go behind the scenes with like Mariah Carey's Heartbreaker, and they would okay. like, they would talk about like the development, and they mm-hmm. would interview like the background dancers, and they would talk to Mariah, and she'd be like, it's day three on my video. I'm getting my nails done. I'm so excited. And then they would show them like lip syncing. And then at the end of the show, they would have a countdown. It would be the debut of the video. I love that show. I like a behind the scenes anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, VH1 is a sister channel of MTV. They're not a competitor.
Yeah. Is that recent?
No,
VH1. They were always related?
Yes, VH1 debuted in 1985.
I definitely watched VH1 more.
Yes.
I watched VH1 mm-hmm. for pop-up videos.
Yes.
I watched VH1 for Behind the Music.
Behind the Music was one of my favorites.
They had some good like programming blocks that were like music that I actually liked.
Exactly. Well, it started out in 1985 as a hub for adult contemporary music videos.
Oh,
yeah, so we were never
like
cool.
It's like old.
I know.
Is that why I liked it?
Well, and
like
then
comforting,
yeah, comforting.
People's navels were covered up.
Celine Dion music videos, left and right. Shania Twain.
Oh.
CMT is also a sister channel of MTV.
Right, I did watch a lot of CMT.
Oh my gosh, when I was homesick. Okay, when I was homesick, I would watch CMT music videos because country music videos, my parents were more comfortable with me okay. watching because it was always wholesome. You know, they're mm-hmm. riding a horse or they're in the back of a truck. They kissed with their mouths closed. There was no tongue. You know, it was very beautiful. That was when I first saw, that was when I first saw Reba McEntire's Fancy, which you and I still
that
sing.
That is an inappropriate song
no,
if
it's
your mom's talking about. Ugh.
But I didn't know, and mom didn't
that
know.
Song.
Julie and I will, on occasion, burst into Fancy by Reba McEntire, who's a treasure, and she'll never die.
I remember it all very well. Looking back, it was summer, turned 18.
Julia
We're not
going
to sing the whole thing.
Julia knows more words than I do. But when mom was in the kitchen, or she was on the phone, I would sneakily change it back to MTV. Yeah, so I could watch the like.
So
the,
you use CMT as your cover?
Yes. So mom, now you know. Sorry, mom.
It's just the secret. Revealing secrets left and right.
Yeah. So here's some last minute trivia about MTV. In 2010, a study by GLAAD found that of 207.5 hours of primetime programming on MTV, 42% included contact reflecting the lives of gay, bisexual, and transgender people. This was the highest in the industry and the highest percentage ever.
Oh, wow.
Also, in the late 1980s, before the World Wide Web, MTV VJ Adam Curry began experimenting on the internet, and he registered the then unclaimed domain name MTV.com in 1993 with the idea of being MTV's official news voice on the internet. Although this move was sanctioned by his supervisors at MTV, when Curry left to start his own web portal design and hosting company, MTV subsequently sued him for the domain name, which led to an out-of-court settlement. So a VJ was just like noodling around and was like, hey, what if I buy MTV.com? And his supervisors were like, I guess, whatever. What's mm-hmm. the internet? Series of tubes?
Yeah.
I guess. And then he got sued by them later when he could have just made like a buttload of money. Whatever. Couple of the many controversies of MTV.
Hmm.
Beavis and Butthead, the TV show, was moved from an 8 p.m. time slot to 11 p.m. time slot because a child burned down his house because he watched an episode of Beavis and Butthead. And apparently one of them, Beavis or Butthead, I don't know, I never watched it.
I find
that kind of animation so disgusting to me. But he would like light a lighter and say, fire. And apparently this kid burned down his house because of it.
It was a boy.
It was a little boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's be honest. Also, do you remember Andrew Dice Clay, the Dice Man?
Yeah, the very profane.
Yes. So he performed at the 1989 VMAs, performing his stand-up, which was just solely consisted of dirty nursery rhymes. Do you remember this?
No.
It was just like, he was like, Little Miss Muffet sat on the tuffet and her vagina fell out. Ba-boom! Like, it's just so, it's like so bad. Like, no one would find that funny at any point in time, but somehow he had a very big following. It was literally, he would finish everything with ba-boom! Like, it, I'm sorry, we can edit that. I apologize. Anyway, he got a lifetime ban.
Yeah,
the executive.
I feel like he got banned from a lot of things. No, he definitely did. Lifetime.
Well, he got banned so hard that apparently Billy Idol's Rock the Cradle of Love featured a couple of clips from a movie that Andrew Dice Clay was in, and the executives were like, cut it out. Like, his face wasn't even allowed to be on MTV.
Oh my gosh.
I know. That's how much they were like, get this Goomba out of my face. I never want to see him again. So that's MTV.
Wow. You know,
I'm going to look up that Little Miss Muffet joke. And I'm not going to link it because I don't want to give Andrew Dice Clay any viewership. But just for my own satisfaction, I need to know what the punchline was for that very disgusting joke. Again, Mom and Dad, I'm very sorry. Okay. Now I'm going to be doing a quiz on the 1980s. Entitled, right. I Love the 80s. Okay. Number one. What color did the ghosts in Pac-Man have to be in order for you to eat them as Pac-Man? Number two. On November 17th, 1981, approximately 30 million Americans turned on their TVs to watch what couple get married? Question number three. The 10-week Falklands War was a 1982 clash between the UK and what country? Question number four. Cabbage Patch Kids were originally called what? Number five. What other vice did Ronald Reagan turn to after he gave up pipe smoking? Question number six. Speaking of soaps, what recently rebooted soap opera was a huge hit in the 1980s, sparking fashion trends, breaking TV records, and even earning a reference in a Prince song? Number seven. What was the first James Bond movie released in the 1980s? Question number eight. What popular 80s band got their name from the 1960s movie Barbarella, starring Jane Fonda? Question number nine. What championship pro football team had a rap hit in the mid-80s with the Super Bowl shuffle? And finally, question number 10. What 60s and 70s TV host became mayor of Palm Springs, California in 1988? I'll give you a minute to think about it, and we'll be back with answers.
This.
Question number one, what color did the ghosts in Pac-Man have to be in order to eat them?
Blue.
I knew you'd know this.
Do you know the ghosts' names?
Yes, it's Inky, Blinky, Pinky, and oh shoot. No, I know this.
I know you know it.
And Clyde.
Yeah.
I love that. It's so cute. Okay. On November 17th, 1981, approximately 30 million Americans turned on their TVs to watch what couple get married?
Is it Charles and Diana?
No, that's what
is it
thought.
Luke and Laura?
It is Luke and Laura. Luke and Laura from ABC's General Hospital got married on the TV show, even though in the past, on the show, in the history, Luke actually raped Laura?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
It's really effed up.
It's not great.
Effed up show.
Super effed up for a soap opera. And that's saying a lot.
Mm.
Number three, the 10-week Falklands War was a 1982 clash between the UK and what country?
Tell me what continent it's from.
It's South America. Where are Falklands?
What? I don't know. How about Venezuela?
Nope, it's Argentina.
Ah.
The Falkland Islands are British territory in the South Atlantic Ocean.
Okay.
So there you go. Number four, Cabbage Patch Kids were originally called what?
Can't think of it.
They were called Little People.
Hmm.
Which, okay. Sure, they're people and they're little. But Cabbage Patch is a little bit cuter.
But also, we already had Little People. We had Fisher-Price Little People.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It was designed by a college artist, this doll, mm-hmm. and sold it to
Xavier Roberts.
Yes, good for you. Oh, yeah, of course you know. You work at a play museum. They were huge, and I wasn't old enough to like really be a part of mm-hmm. that, but I remember watching like TV documentaries yeah. about that kind of thing, and it was insanity.
I had a boy one.
No one likes the boy ones.
Neil Grant.
That's a very sophisticated name.
Well, they give you the name. It's on the adoption certificate that comes with the doll. Mm-hmm. It already has a name. And all my friends had like a girl doll and I had a boy doll.
How did you get a boy doll?
I think my Aunt Kathy got it for me. Well. And he had like little looped yarn hair that went right back into his little plastic head.
Poor Neil.
Poor Neil.
He just wanted love. He just wanted love. But you were just disappointed you had a boy. Okay, what other vice did Ronald Reagan turn to after he gave up pipe smoking?
That'd be jelly beans.
Yes, jelly beans. He especially loved Jelly Belly beans, which are the best jelly beans.
They are the best jelly beans.
Delicious.
Except do not buy the Bamboozled one.
No.
Don't do that.
They have disgusting flavors.
Sorry.
No, it's Bean Boozled. Yeah, don't do it. My favorite is buttered popcorn, which is weird, but they taste exactly like buttered popcorn. It's amazing. So question number six, speaking of soaps, what recently rebooted soap opera was a huge hit in the 1980s, sparking fashion trends, breaking TV records, and even earning a reference in a Prince song?
Is it Dynasty?
It is Dynasty. It's referenced in the Prince song Kiss, as in you don't have to watch Dynasty to have an attitude. Yeah.
Nice.
Question number seven, what was the first James Bond movie released in the 1980s?
Moonraker.
No, it was For Your Eyes Only, which was in 1981.
Okay.
This is interesting. What popular 80s band got their name from the 1960s movie Barbarella?
And they're not a band called Barbarella?
No, they're not a band. No, they're not.
I don't know.
It's Duran Duran.
Oh.
So the villain in the movie, I've never seen it. All I know is Jane Fonda looks amazing.
Great.
She has a companion who's a blind angel. And the villain in the movie is named Durand Durand.
Okay.
So they dropped the D's, apparently, the last D's. So it's Duran Duran. Okay, question nine. I know you know this one because you were giggling when I read it. What championship pro football team had a rap hit in the mid-80s with the Super Bowl shuffle?
Chicago Bears.
Yeah, the Chicago Bears.
Gotta do that Super Bowl shuffle.
I have
with
a distinct...
William the Refrigerator Perry.
I have a distinct memory of my dad, like... making severe fun of it with his brother in our living room when we
you
were living in North Buffalo.
You should do that dance at your wedding.
Oh my gosh.
Your father daughter dance instead of cherry pie can be the Super Bowl shuffle by the Chicago Bears.
Well, it seems like it's an easy dance for him to learn.
Yeah.
It's just like a side to side. You don't really move your feet that much.
Yeah, and you can surprise him with it.
Be like, Daddy, come on out here.
It would be a great joke that like three of us would get.
I know, just laugh, but it would be so worth it. Instead of butterfly kisses, it's the Super Bowl show. That's more up Dad's. That's more up his alley anyway. Okay, and finally, number 10, which 60s and 70s TV host became mayor of Palm Springs, California in 1988?
Is that Sonny Bono?
It is Sonny Bono. Yes.
Who went on to ruin copyright law in America.
Okay, he died in a really tragic way, okay?
I didn't put that tree there. I don't know.
How did he ruin copyright law?
Oh my God.
Because it was
the
what
Sonny Bono Copyright Term Extension Act.
Oh man, I'm getting like archivist all up in here. Go.
So while he was a representative, he was representing the Disney Corporation.
Oh
because
no.
Because Mickey Mouse was about to enter the public domain.
Yes.
So he got Congress to extend the term of copyright to like 120 years for a corporate thing. So that extended Mickey Mouse's copyright date. So, but by saving Mickey Mouse from the public domain so that Disney couldn't make money off of when people would make things of it when it's in the public domain, everything else got effed over.
Oh,
so
no.
Nothing has entered the public domain since like 1988.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And nothing will enter until 2019, technically, only if Congress, who is busy with a bunch of other things, doesn't extend the act again. But
wow,
it's just like halted scholarship and like, you know, all this creativity and all these works and stuff. And copyright was originally only meant to be 14 years. So for it to be, sorry,
you can delete. No, do not delete this. It is
such passion.
No, for I want to hear about this. Okay. And I think our listeners do too. So thank you, Julia, for telling us about copyright law.
What a way to end it, you know?
To really close
the
book.
You were like, great, I get to listen to like cool things about MTV and like, oh, are they going to talk about Singled Out? And then you get to listen to me rant about copyright law
and really just excoriate a dead man. Sonny Bono, may he rest, was apparently very dangerous.
He was bought. He was bought.
Oh, yeah, he was bought. Who isn't bought by Disney? Again.
Us.
No. But if Disney wants to throw some cash our way, we're not going to say no. I mean, let's be honest. I'll sing It's a Small World at the top of every show. If you're going to toss some cash our way. I'm not proud. I'm just saying. Anyway, thank you for listening.
This was the episode about MTV.
Yeah, this was an episode about MTV. Thank you for listening, everyone. Thank you for being patient with our craziness. You can, if you wish to listen to more of us, we are available on Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, and anywhere you find podcasts. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Maybe not focus entirely on this particular episode when you rate. Maybe listen to a couple more and get a sense.
We have a Facebook page that you can find us on. Please like us. We like validation. We also have Twitter at MissInfoPod. You can find us on, you can write to us at Gmail at MissInfoPod@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And you can find us on our website at www.missinfopod.com.
You know what though? I kind of like three dub dot. That's coined by us. No
TM.
One take that.
TM. All right. Awesome. Thanks for listening and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks guys. Bye.
Bye.